Mikito says you won't be with us tomorrow, Lana says.
My brain jerks to a stop as thoughts rearrange. Oh, we're not having the talk, just a talk. Right, I can deal with that. Yeah, I wasn't... Wait, us?
I lean forward, my voice tight.
I'm going too. The bosses. They need to be killed.
Of course they do. Why are you going?
Because it needs to be done, she replies, frowning.
Sure, sure, but you're...
I open my mouth and clamp it shut as Ali shakes his head at me.
Oh, crap.
I'm what, John?
Her voice rising.
Lana glares at me. A paper pusher? A girl?
No, not that. You just, you know, haven't really been... She snorts.
If you've forgotten, I walked here with Mikito and Richard. I still go out with them once in a while.
Lana gets to her feet.
I saved your ungrateful ass a month ago. I can take care of myself.
I open my mouth, wanting to point out that if I knew her at all, she was just about to ask me to keep her higher-leveled brother safe, but I snap it shut at Ali's screamed mental, No!
Right, right. Not the way to win an argument.
While I'm working that all out, Lana stomps right out and I watch her back, grimacing.
Well done, boyo.
Ali golf claps from his seat on the table. Bite me. Late at night, I stare at the ceiling, trying to figure out what went wrong. I spent weeks away from them all, trying to come to terms with who and what I am, with the anger that sits in me, the world that we live in. And within hours of coming back, I'm fighting with Lana and confused once again. I don't know what they want from me. Not really, and the gods know I definitely don't know what I want. To survive, sure. To get through another day, get a little stronger, get a little better, to fight because I can. Saying it, thinking it out loud, it seems so stupid. I slowly exhale, focusing on just breathing for a few moments. I don't know what I want for myself or for Lana. I just know that I don't want her to die. I don't want anyone else I could save to die. Truth be told, as much as I said otherwise to Mikito, I probably would have gone and kept an eye on the group anyway. Now that Lana's going, I'm definitely going. I don't need another ghost haunting my conscience. I have enough already.
Chapter 4. What did you do? Richard mutters as he grabs my arm, dragging me aside the next morning. The hunting groups had gathered around the sternwheeler near Rotary Park. When I drove in late, Richard immediately spotted me and stalked over.
My sister's been on the warpath all morning. Richard growls, gripping my arm tightly. She's insisting on being part of the main teams instead of the reserve.
What makes you think I did anything? I ask innocently, giving him big eyes behind my helmet.
Because she only ever gets that angry when it comes to you.
Richard lets go of my arm, glaring at me. If she gets hurt, you'll get your puppies to tear me limb from limb. Got it? I reply wryly and shake my head.
Those two...
As Richard opens his mouth to say something else, he's cut off by a short, angry man in a suit. A suit in this day and age? And in Whitehorse, too, where formal attire is your best plaid shirt and a pair of clean jeans. His voice rising as he speaks, Shorty says,
What is he doing here?
I grin at Eric Roth, a.k.a. Minion. Just ambling along. How are you doing?
You. Get out of here. This is official Whitehorse City Council business, and you are not invited.
Minion snarls, stepping forward and vibrating. I'm reminded of a tiny yappy dog. I feel one side of my lips tug up at the thought, and he stops and steps back. Trust me, I'm not here for you, I drawl, then raise a hand. Minion flinches slightly, probably remembering my hand wrapped around his throat, and I flick it, shooing him away. Go do your thing. Minion glares at me, opening his mouth to say something else before he's cut off by a low rumble.
Are we to begin, Counselor Roth? I am being paid by the hour.
The speaker is a 9-foot-tall bull-man hybrid, a full-on minotaur from Legends in sci-fi battle armor. The minotaur even has an axe, though the barrel shape in the center lends credence to the idea that it's more than just a melee weapon. The Yerrick, the real name for the Minotaurs, is the only group of immigrants to Whitehorse thus far. They haven't had the best of receptions, and there's a large degree of animosity toward them. Led by Capstan Ulrich, their first fist, whatever that means, the Yerrick are a tribe of career adventurers. When the Yerrick are invited and I'm not, that shows you how low I am on the totem pole of popularity. Minion's face twists again in a sneer before he hurries over to the group leaders, where Lana and Makito stand. Lana shoots me a glare that could freeze water solid. Richard mutters next to me, "You've got to stop antagonizing that man." "Better to twit him than kill him," I reply, flexing my hand by my side.
"Sometimes I'm not entirely sure if you're joking," Richard says.
I don't let him know that I'm not sure either. Minion almost literally admitted to burning down the Yerrick's buildings, but here he is, walking around free and clear and organizing everyone, and I'm persona non grata. Okay, fine. Choking him out in broad daylight might have been a bit of an overreaction to losing face in front of Roxley and Capstan, but even now, I feel my blood boil at the betrayal. I exhale, forcing myself to let it go. The past is past, after all. Time to stop bitching about it. What is, is. I shake my head slightly, realizing that Richard left while I was caught up in my thoughts. As much as I believe Minion was the mastermind behind the fire, there's no evidence. He never directly admitted to anything, and the actual culprits have been caught and tried. They're working off their debts in the compound that the Yerrick built on their burnt-out plots of land, and as far as the city is concerned, the case is closed. Tensions between the races are high still, but between the increased surveillance drones and a few very public and nasty beatdowns by the Yerrick, direct attacks have stopped. As I stand by myself and idly watch Minion speak to the groups, I read lips and pick out where he's sending everyone. Ali helps by hacking his system window and displaying it for me, adding annotations as each group is directed to a different boss. I wonder where Fred, our erstwhile mayor, is before I remember he prefers to let his minions do the actual work. If I have to say one good thing about Minion, it's that he's highly organized. 10 minutes later, the groups are disappearing, and that's even after time to answer any questions. My gaze wanders over each group once more, watching as Capstan splits a few of his men off to join different groups. It's not a horrible setup, other than the fact that Minion only intends to keep a single reserve team, the Chaos Hands. I check their levels again, see that nothing is over 25, and wince. We're all still under-leveled for this area. My gaze sweeps over the group again, and I realize that gathered here are the careful, the lucky, and the crazy. The brave, the rational, and the unlucky are dead, murdered in the first few days of the system for the most part. First responders, the RCMP, the burgeoning heroes all died in the opening scenes of the apocalypse, fighting creatures that outleveled them. It's only through the mercy of the gods and Lord Roxley's presence that we've survived as long as we have.
"So, boyo, we following the girl?"
Ali sends to me mentally, and I nod.
"You know she's going to be pissed, right?"
Better pissed than dead. We'll hang back a bit, though. Ever since mana flooded the world and the system came, monsters have been appearing all over Earth. There are two kinds, the ones that have evolved from Earth, and the ones that have been imported into the world via the system. Occasionally, those monsters are particularly nasty, a system-designated boss. Or maybe they're already bosses and the system just tags them. Either way, they're strong and tough, and their presence means that particular monster group will populate faster than normal. Leave them alone long enough, and you get monster swarms, and they become a mainstay in a region, flooding outward. If you're really unlucky, they find a location with a high mana density and stay there, eventually creating a dungeon. Since the entire world has been designated a dungeon world, and we're getting the overflow of mana from every other system-controlled world, it's pretty much a given we're going to get a ton of dungeons and bosses. The goal today is simple, though. Just like we used to manage the wildlife, we're going to manage the monster population. Just like you kill the bulls to reduce the herd, we kill the bosses. Of course, along the way we'll be killing a ton of normal monsters too, but that's the way it works. Loping along far behind Lana's group, I have a lot of time to think. The occasional monsters they miss and the ones that try to sneak up on them aren't even a challenge. I have Ali patched into their communications channel as he floats alongside me, listening in just in case something important comes up. Mostly, though, the two of us are along for the ride. If we're real lucky, I won't need to get involved. An hour later, I come to a stop as Lana's group hits the boundary of their target's area. I pull up my mini-map, focusing on the green dots. Night Beetle, level 29, HP 180 of 180. Ali pulls up some information for me, flicking over the system window. As I read the monster information, I relax. Each beetle is purple and gray, about 2.5 feet in length and 1 foot tall, with armored carapaces that give them their name. Tough, and they have a tendency to swarm. However, Lana's group of 5 humans is augmented by her 3 oversized huskies and a mutated fox. While Lana might not go out as often, she certainly knows how to control her animals, and the way the red dots of the low-level enemies she fights keep disappearing on my minimap tell me they're doing well. I rub my neck, fingers hitting armor as I do so, and I grimace. Armor is all nice and good, but try giving yourself a massage while wearing it. I sigh, giving up on trying to get rid of the tension that way, and just pull out some chocolate to chew on while I wait. Ali's head is tilted as he obviously listens to something before he grunts.
John, how much do you like Jim?
What's wrong? I look for where Jim should be and realize he's only a few kilometers away.
Nothing yet, but I don't think his group can deal with what he's going to be fighting, Ali says. So we going?
I hesitate, looking back at where Lana fights. She hasn't hit the boss yet, and those things can change the flow of a battle. On the other hand, I bite my lip, twisting to where Jim's boss marker is, and take off running. I hope I'm doing the right thing.
What's so bad Jim can't handle? I ask as I pound through the dirt, the powered armor covering the ground at a good pace. I shatter a rock and the occasional fallen tree, knowing that I don't have a lot of time. His boss wasn't that much farther out than Lana's. Still, Jim's a big boy. He's the most senior of the city's hunters and a tough old coot.
Lightning squirrels!
Ali floats alongside me with ease as I activate Thousand Steps, a skill that lets me move faster.
They're mutations of your ground squirrels. Individually, they're really low level. However, they swarm. Each of them feeds off the other, and there's a lot more of them than Minion knows about.
Even as we talk, my map updates with little gray dots. Low level indeed. I watch as the dots disappear in front of the friendly blue dots of Jim's group. No surprise that they're taking him out at range. His entire group is composed of rifle users. Unfortunately, what they can't see is the swarm of gray dots that have begun to converge on them. As the swarm closes in, I spot a blue dot flicker and disappear. I grit my teeth as the blue dots pull back in a somewhat orderly fashion, but they can't keep ahead. I can see flashes of electricity with my eyes now. The never-ending arcs have lit the undergrowth on fire. Beam weaponry stabs out from the embattled group, along with the crack of projectile fire, each shot killing individual squirrels. There's even the occasional explosion, but that doesn't really seem to change my map. I've opened fire myself, keeping to normal projectiles as I unload on the squirrels. Each shot disintegrates a small creature, turning it into red mist, and I even occasionally manage to get more than one with a shot. "This isn't working!" I yell, bouncing forward. The occasional lightning arc at this distance feels like a static electricity discharge through the armor, but we're going right into the center of the swarm, and I know it's going to get worse. I draw a deep breath, letting the shooting and running go on autopilot as I reach into myself from my own link to the elemental affinity and push it out of me, letting it envelop me. When the next lightning strike hits, I use the gift to reroute the arc around me and Saber rather than through us. Once that's established, it takes me a moment to cast my next spell. Greater regeneration increases my natural healing rate so that I can deal with the bleed-through. A thought lets me review the damage I'm receiving from each blast. Minus 13 HP, 78% resisted.
I've got a plan, Ali shouts as I keep firing. Just follow the bouncing ball.
I snarl, running ahead and following the bouncing ball that appears in my display as I keep shooting. Occasionally, my path intersects an unlucky squirrel and I either stab or stomp it. Electricity keeps building around me and we're almost constantly wreathed in lightning now. Ali isn't speaking, his face set in grim concentration as he floats alongside me. My jaw hurts from clenching it so tight as the lightning shudders through me, even as it slowly drives my health down. A slow ticking down in the corner of my vision tells me Saber's not doing great either.
Okay, boyo, grab me when you reach me and lend me your mana and strength,
Ali says as he darts ahead, right to where the bouncing ball lands. He appears for a second, his hands raised as the lightning flows through him. I extend my sense, my affinity, and I see what Ali's doing. Everything that hits him, he attaches a thread to, sliding it into the bodies of the squirrels. I place a hand on Ali's and make the connection, feeling the lightning rip through me and pull mana alongside the flow. Pain fills my world, consuming me, and all I can do is go along for the ride. Muscles clench and spasm, my heart beats erratically, and I'm pretty sure I void my bowels at some point, but I keep holding on to Ali, refusing to let go. Pain, anger, and stubbornness, linchpins of my life. A part of me watches as Ali threads all of it together, faster and faster, until everything around is attached to him. Ali snarls, twisting with his hands, and I feel the charge as the threads of mana he has connected via the lightning tug on the squirrels. It's just a little, a small alteration in their atoms, but at the speed of, well, light, the change happens. Electrons slip free, loosened from their moorings. A small change to each atom multiplied thousands, millions of times. The lightning explodes. Lightning squirrels are no longer able to contain and direct the overflow, so it heats them up, heats us up, and I know I'm screaming. 1 second, we're in the middle of a maelstrom, and the next, it disappears. Stray arcs jump and skip all around us, the ground, molten glass. I stumble away, brute forcing Saber to move because it's still rerouting from all the damage. I fall on my face on smoking, ashen ground as Ali slowly floats down, his eyes sparkling.
What a rush!
Ali says, holding up a hand and waggling olive-colored fingers that dance with electricity.
Whoa! That's a ton of notifications. Wait 1 second.
I stare into the sky, my muscles twitching occasionally from the after-effects. Eventually, I reach out with one of my shop purchase skills and dump Saber directly into my inventory. Quite a useful skill to have, being able to put anything that the system registers directly into my inventory just by being in contact with it. My body drops onto the scorched earth and I groan, rolling up as the heat cuts through my skin-tight armored coveralls. I don't even want to know how much it's going to cost to fix Saber. The remains of Jim's party, with an added golden-brown minotaur, stumble over, staring at the smoking squirrel corpses around me, their eyes wide. I look around for a moment, taking in the smoking grass, the occasional glassy spot, and the hundreds of corpses, as well as the occasional burning trees, and realize I'm having one of those post-apocalyptic moments in real life. Hell, I can't even be blamed for this one.
John?
Jim, the big First Nation elder, stammers as he limps up to me.
Yeah,
I look at Ali, who continues to float, muttering to himself. I thought you might need some help.
Shit, you got that right.
Jim's voice rises and falls as he tries to stay calm.
That was supposed to be a relatively easy kill. Just a bunch of ground squirrels. I lost half my men.
Sorry. I looked around, then sighed. That's a hell of a lot of looting. The group jerkily nods, each of them moving to their respective glowing corpses. Lovely system, only allowing us to loot our own kills. At least if you aren't in a party, and I never did formally join theirs. Not that I really want to share. It's going to be expensive enough fixing Saber. I start looting after a few minutes, when I can handle standing up after eyeing Lana's group in the map. Seems like they survived without me. A short while later, Ali finally perks up and waves, flicking a series of system windows to me. Level up. You have reached level 22 as an Eretran Honor Guard. Stat points automatically distributed. You have 3 free attribute points and 4 class skills to distribute. Resistance improved. Electricity plus 10%. 50% total.
Well, that was interesting.
I'm grateful I don't have to wade through all the text about how many monsters I killed. Looking at Ali, I point at the bodies while I pull up my information to take a closer look at my status. I can hear him muttering about being given the scut work as he does the looting for me, but I ignore him. If he didn't complain, I'd be worried he was sick. Can spirits get sick? Status screen. Name, John Lee. Class, Eritrean Honor Guard. Race, human, male. Level, 22. Titles, Monster's Bane, Redeemer of the Dead. Health, 1,070. Stamina, 1,070. Mana, 840. Mana regeneration, 70 per minute. Attributes. Strength, 66. Agility, 102. Constitution, 107. Perception, 42. Intelligence, 84. Willpower, 90. Charisma, 16. Luck, 20. Class skills. Mana Blade, 1. Blade Strike, 2. Thousand Steps, 1. Altered Space, 1. 2R1, 1. The Body's Resolve, 1. Greater Detection, 1. Instantaneous Inventory, 1. Cleave, 1. Spells. Improved Minor Healing, 2. Greater Regeneration. Improved Mana Dart, 4. Tinder. Enhanced Lightning Strike. I nod slightly, glancing over the basic screen. Gotta let Ali know to add a section about resistances to this, but it looks a heck of a lot neater without my skills. They were cluttering it up, and like Ali said, what's the point of listing them? I can either do it or not. Mental note, time to purchase another area effect spell that isn't lightning. Maybe a fireball or something like that. Though, maybe there's a skill. Then again, all the really useful skills are expensive. Not that spells aren't either, but didn't I come along just to watch out for Lana? How the hell did I end up in this situation again? I glare at Ali, who at least is helping with the looting and storage of bodies. This is going to take forever, but every single credit counts. Chapter 5. It takes me hours to get everything collected and shoved away. Hours of collecting dead bodies and scanning the map to ensure the others are fine. Only once does Ali stop, frowning before he shakes his head. He lets me know later that it was just the reserve team being called out to help another group with a larger monster mob than expected. Since the initial party had scouted it out before engaging, it all went pretty smoothly. By the time I get back, most of the groups have already reported in and the day is coming to an end. Walking without power armor sucks, but at least that gives me time to kill more monsters. I drop Saber off with Zev, who promises to give me the estimate later. The way Zev says it, I make sure to head to the shop and the butchers immediately. A few hundred squirrel corpses and fur and assorted loot drops later, I might have enough for a few days of meals. Gods, that sucked. As I exit the shop, I find a golden yellow Yarrick waiting for me, the same one that was in Jim's unfortunate team. Standing just under 9 feet tall, he wears a bulky armored vest along with a simple reinforced jumpsuit. Slung over his shoulder is a rifle, and another pistol is strapped to his legs. A series of grenades hang off his belt. Other than the lack of a melee weapon, it's a pretty typical setup for the Yarrick from what I can see. Aaron Hosser, level 38, Axe Brother, HP 1,240 of 1,240.
Monster's Bane Lee,
he greets me, bowing slightly.
I'm Aaron Hosser. I wish to thank you for your aid this day.
Not at all, I flash him a grin, then tilt my head. Jim and the rest okay?
Elder Caldberry is speaking with Counselor Roth. He requested I pass on his thanks as well.
You're welcome, I grunt, walking past him. Aaron just nods slightly, watching me stomp off. Thanks. Har. Thanks doesn't pay my bill with Zev or get me a new bike. Stomping back to the city, I glare around me, headed back to my house. Grumbling to myself, I find myself staring at my house. No Saber, not enough credits to fix her up properly, and no transportation means I'm stuck in Whitehorse for the next few weeks. As much as I love the Mecca, getting her fixed is becoming a real drain on my resources each time she gets damaged.
John! Everything okay?
Richard asks, watching me and the floating, silent Ali.
Fine. Just fine, I snarl,
not bothering to stop as I head downstairs. I shut the door, forcing myself not to slam it before I flop onto my bed. Why the hell did I help them? I glare at the ceiling. Every time I think I've contained one problem, the Yerrick, the Hakarta, my anger, something else crops up and bites me in the ass.
Morning, John,
Lana says as I crawl up the stairs the next day. Makito and Richard nod to me, tension filling the room. When I choked Minion in public, it was Makito and Richard who stopped me, rather forcefully. Let's just say I wasn't exactly in a listening mood. Since then, I've been staying away, hiding out in the fort while they lived in my house. I needed time to sort out my brain, my emotions. While we've interacted in passing since then, things just haven't been the same. Where's Rachel? I tilt my head as I look around the kitchen.
She's with the Brothers of the Wolf, Richard answers.
Makito nods, adding another piece of fried fish to her bowl of rice. I sigh and take a seat at the setting that has been laid out for me. I nod in thanks as Lana drops a stack of pancakes on my plate before taking a seat herself. Lana smiles slightly, stretching and making my gaze shift to her ample rack before she continues.
I heard you had some trouble yesterday.
Not me, Jim, I reply around a mouthful.
Really? I heard you had to walk home,
Lana replies, her face perfectly serene. Saber was damaged. My eyes narrow as I dump more maple syrup on the pancakes. I could almost feel bad about how well we eat compared to the general population, but we do pay for this food ourselves. Most of us spend our days working to get additional food and credits for the city, so spending our own money on luxuries shouldn't feel wrong, right?
Right.
So, trouble. Lana sips on juice before she continues.
And someone was worried about me.
I sigh, finally catching on. All this was to say I told you so? Lana smiles innocently, slowly cutting apart her own pancake.
I never said those words.
Uh-huh. I grunt, and a part of me wants to point out she'd have been in as much trouble as Jim was if she had been the one fighting the lightning squirrels. A wiser part of me makes me focus on my own breakfast. Some things you just don't say. As I chew my next bite, I see Makito smiling slightly while Richard pays way too much attention to Shadow. I sigh, deciding not to engage further as Lana finishes her breakfast. As I finally finish eating, Ollie pops into existence next to me.
So, boyo, where to next?
John? Richard butts in, leaning forward. We could use your help. There's a monster lair we'd like to clear out.
I grunt and shake my head. No, I'll be fine. Makito opens her mouth and shuts it, staring at me before she sighs and grabs her naginata. Richard nods as well, following Makito out. I watch them leave, a part of me wondering if they're going to try to take on a lair all by themselves.
You going to cold shoulder them forever?
Lana asks as she puts the plates away, leaning against the counter.
What? You know what?
She points at me.
You need a ride and you're refusing to go with them for what? Your pride?
I'd rather hunt by myself, I mutter, not meeting her eyes. They're doing well enough without me. I like hunting alone. Lana uncrosses her arms, shaking her head.
Well enough. Rachel left because of you. Richard and Makito have been grabbing whoever is free whenever they can, working what they can when they can. They aren't leveling up that well because of that.
I keep staring at my empty plate and Lana sighs, shaking her head.
You could just admit you're still pissed at them, you know.
I'm not, I protest, looking at her again, my anger flaring.
Really?
Lana crosses her arms, staring at me before shaking her head.
Fine. You stubborn idiot.
I am not. I watch her leave and I sigh. At some point there's a conversation we have to have, but I think we both know it's one that can't be taken back. I shake my head, dismissing the thought, and I look at Ali. I'm not being stubborn. I like hunting alone.
Uh-huh. Right. Sure.
Ali nods.
Let's head south. Records indicate that it hasn't been swept in a few weeks. If we move fast, we should be able to break out into a higher level zone, too.
Gotcha. The first couple hours are easy. I turn on 1,000 steps the moment I break into the tree line at the back of the house, moving from one blip to the next. None of the monsters are hard. In fact, They're so easy it's trivial. Alpine forest filled with aspen, pine, and fir has mutated under the influence of mana. Some just grew stronger and harder. Other trees grew new defenses. A silvery sheen on one, spikes on another, pollen that's acidic or toxic, fruits that are now edible. I dodge the dangers I know of, breathe deeply when I can, and make note of new changes absently. The forest changes, just like the rest of the territory, and all that we can do is wait for everything to settle and change with it. Moving in a zigzag pattern, I end up spending more time than I'd prefer in the lower-level zone around Whitehorse. I'll have to ask Ali to run the numbers later and see if it's worth the time compared to what I can get dealing with higher-level monsters. Monster zones aren't particularly steady, especially in a burgeoning dungeon world. They're more a guide than a rule, which is why when I hit the level 30-plus zone, I slow down. You never know when you'll run into a truly nasty monster out here, and without Saber, I'm not entirely confident I can take on anything above level 50 without getting seriously hurt. Sure, we heal after a few minutes, but you try having your guts torn out repeatedly and tell me you want to sign up for it on an ongoing basis. Without Saber, all I've got for protection is a simple armored coveralls that might soak up incidental damage, but not much else. That means that when I fight, I can't just bull rush into danger and let the mechas soak up the damage while I hammer away at the monsters. Instead, I have to fight like Makito, working on positions, dodging and striking only when it's safe to do so. It slows down fights and forces me to use a lot more mana to heal when I inevitably get hit. Worst, since I'm fighting alone, I can't afford to let my mana drain completely in case I run into something nasty, so I end up doing more rest stops. Funny thing is that the drop in mobility is the least of my concerns. Sure, in mecha mode, I could run through the forest at a slightly higher speed due to the increased attributes, but it's not that much different these days. When I first bought the personal assault vehicle, the boost in attributes by itself made the purchase well worth it. At that time, it added anywhere from a third to half again to my physical stats, making me stronger and faster when I desperately needed every edge I could get. These days, the boost is much less, though even a 10% increase is nothing to sneeze at. And while in bike mode, I can cover a lot more ground a lot faster. I long ago stopped working easily accessible hiking trails, preferring to head into the untamed wilderness. Lots more monsters out there, since there are fewer hunters. In the end, all my concerns about dangerous monsters are for nothing. I don't run into anything out of my level, and while today's hunt is slower than previous ones, I don't run into anything that gives me too much trouble. I admit, it's a bit of a cheat when you can sense and track monsters before they can see you, especially when you can take them out at range. When I get back, it's around 4 PM, and the only reason I've called it a day is because I'm out of space. I have trouble just leaving corpses around and not dragging the bodies back for processing. It's not as if the many, many, many new bugs, pests, and other vermin don't clean up those bodies within days, but just leaving the bodies seems wasteful. It's not an entirely rational viewpoint, since the credits I gain from doing so won't make a dent, but there it is. In Whitehorse, I head straight to the butchering yard, then I go to the shop to sell my system loot. As I exit the shop, I find myself overtaken by a man dressed in clothing two sizes too large. The man is hunched over, his fists curled up and his face scrunched as he strides right past me. I have to jerk to a stop so that I don't run him over, and I almost call out to berate him when something makes me stop. I frown, staring after him as a sixth sense nags at me. Something. Something is wrong, and I work on pinning what it is down. I look closer as he walks right down the street to a new store, finally realizing what it is. His right hand. It's larger than his left, because it's curled up around a grenade. I shout at him, but he's already throwing the grenade into the store, screaming, "I warned you!" I flick on 1,000 steps as I sprint toward him, my head turning to see who is within the store. I see the storekeeper, and without thought, I activate my other skill, 2 or 1. She's staring with a dumbfounded expression when the grenade explodes, cutting off my line of sight in an explosion of flame and glass. My body feels as though it's being roasted alive in a sudden flash of heat that cuts right through my coveralls before the explosion itself reaches me, throwing me back. I have to pick myself off the ground, my pain already receding. The attacker is rolling on the ground from the backblast, and the storekeeper, despite my 2-on-1 skill, is dead. I force myself to take in the injured who were caught in the explosion, and I stagger over to the first injured body I can reach, casting my minor healing spell. It takes a surprisingly short time for things to calm down. A nearby mage throws a rain cloud into the burning store, while her neighbors fix the walls leading to their stores by purchasing upgrades in the shop itself. Bodies are either healed by spells or mend on their own, and the survivors stagger away. The attacker is hustled off into Roxley's domain by a pair of silver and gray-clad guards. Fred Chiotino, our erstwhile mayor, pops out of the council building to talk to people for a few minutes, walking around and glad-handing people with that big, oily smile of his. Somehow, people find it comforting. They set to work sweeping up the mess of glass and steel from the road. Then it's over. At least for most people. Amelia? I walk over as one of the guards bags the storekeeper's body under her directions. John, the ex-constable nods to me, a hand on a wide hip. She's wearing her RCMP uniform again, though it looks to have been let out to accommodate growth in her shoulders. Amelia's voice is cool and professional, but there's a tightness in her eyes. I don't envy her. She's the only human in Roxley's guard, and as such, takes all the flack that we throw at him on her shoulders. What the hell happened? I look into the remains of the store, shaking my head. She purses her lips, shaking it after a moment. I cannot comment on an ongoing investigation. What investigation? I saw it. A whole group of us saw him throw the grenade. He murdered her, I snap, temper flaring. John? I can't talk about it, she snaps, and Veer materializes at my side. The entire looming to intimidate thing never really worked on me. Not even pre-system, when I was a good 4 inches shorter than most Westerners. Now that we're nearly the same height, it really doesn't work. I return the black-skinned, white-haired, dark elf's glare. Amelia snaps. There are rules, damn it! I know all of you people think there aren't, but the rules are in place for a reason. All of us people? I snarl, my hand clenching. Sure, ever since I got the genome treatment, I look more like Keanu Reeves than Jet Li. But that doesn't mean that I've forgotten the barbs and screamed insults over the course of my life. Not that I've forgotten being told to go home to China, even if I grew up in Vancouver. Hunters, Amelia says, pointing a finger at me. All of you, walking around with your weapons and powers, thinking you've got it all figured out. There are rules, and I'll be damned if I'm bending them just to satisfy your curiosity.
Give it up, boyo. She's got a job to do, Ollie interjects.
I grit my teeth and look between the pair before finally, jerkily nodding acceptance. What can I do? Beat them up for not answering my question? I walk away, snarling to myself, questions unanswered. What the hell was that all about?
He wanted his store back,
Lana fills me in later that evening. I caught her in the backyard playing with her furry friends and prodded her for information while children laughed and played in the living room.
His family owned the store pre-system. Then, well, Holly bought the store from the system and set up shop. He wanted her out, said she didn't have the right to it. She refused. The guards had been called in before and sided with her.
And he killed her for that? I mutter. Lana snorts, burying her face in the dog.
You tried to kill Eric.
Rufus whines slightly, feeling Lana's tension, and the puppy turns in her hands to lick at her face.
I might have, I admit, shaking my head slowly. I had my reasons, but so had he, probably. We're all under so much stress, and everything that we knew is gone.
Shit.
Yes,
Lana replies and hugs Rufus. She lets the silence linger as I stew on the parallels. In the end, she speaks again, her voice low.
It's not the only case like this. Not like this, but similar. People moving into houses that aren't theirs. People taking cars from lots and having them fixed up. The workers at the brewery getting upset because we don't hire them because we don't need them.
I didn't know it was that bad.
Bad? That's the easy stuff. Who owns what? That's easy.
She laughs, slightly hysterically,
We have kids who don't have parents. Parents who don't have kids. We have fathers who won't pay or help take care of their kids. We've got assholes who decide that because they've got combat classes, they're important now. They start throwing their weight around, acting like big shots, and because everyone who is important is out hunting, they are big shots. You know why we opened the brewery? Do you?
She twists her hand slightly, pulling out a small ampule that she hands to me.
Arak blood. The best high in the system for us humans. Better than meth, supposedly. We had people buying this and giving it out because there was no more alcohol. And they took it because they needed something to get their minds off this life. So instead, we opened up the brewery and let them get drunk. That was a fun conversation to have with Jim.
What's Roxley doing about all this? I say, frowning.
Roxley? Nothing. He's letting us humans sort out human problems, or so says Veer. Except when someone gets his guards involved, and then the troublemakers end up getting fined. Fined!
She shakes her head.
It's as if everything is about credits to him.
I shake my head, trying to understand why Roxley would do that. It didn't mesh with the man I remembered. Not knowing what else to say, I murmur, sorry.
No, I am. You don't need this. It's not your job. Not your thing, right?
Lana rubs her face, wiping away the tears.
Lana, it's okay. This isn't your city. It isn't your problem. Just... thank you for listening.
She stands, pulling Rufus with her as she walks away. I open my mouth, then shut it again, watching her leave. She's right. I left. I purposely chose not to get involved, not to be part of this. Hell, I'm playing both sides of the equation with the Hakarta just to see what the hell might happen. It was a choice, so now I don't get to bitch about it. Ali? I stare into the distance, absently stroking one of the huskies who has taken to lying next to me.
Yeah, boyo?
Is it all like this?
You mean the other cities?
He shakes his head, holding up a hand.
No, you guys are lucky. For definitions of luck, most places don't have enough people to have a functioning government, never mind worrying about things like who owns what. The big cities were hit harder than anyone else. No one got perks or any other bonuses, so they had no way to fight back. They also got a slew of higher-level monsters. And you know that monsters level up too? Yeah. Guess what killing hundreds, thousands of humans did to even low-level monsters? You guys were lucky Roxley came along and brought his guards. Lucky that the system decided to put a shop right here. You might be losing a few people here and there, but it's a hell of a lot better than the tens or hundreds you have.
I grimace, nodding slowly. Are we the only big organized group left?
Get over yourself, will you? Of course not.
Ali rolls his eyes.
There were a few armies that were out in the field, training or fighting with their weapons fully loaded. There are towns that have managed to survive and hold on, like Carcross. And Roxley isn't unique either. Quite a few others jumped on the chance to buy up small towns and villages and play lord. Truth is, take a city like New York, add all the survivors together, and you'd still have a bigger population than you have here. Just that, so far, they're scattered. Give them a bit of time, and you guys will just be another small, remote group.
I grunt, smiling slightly. That's good. That's very good. Do you have a number?
Of?
Survivors.
12% or so.
I flinch and Ali sighs.
Some places, some cities, they weren't that lucky when the system hit. Santiago disappeared when an air elemental sucked up all the mana and air in the region. Bangalore had a swarm of liminal locusts, flesh-eating insects that get into everything. New Orleans was flooded when a leviathan surfaced nearby and got shot at by the Navy. As I said, you got lucky.
I twitch, eyes going glassy, as I imagine what it'd be like in any of those cities. God. Lucky. Chapter 6. I hold up the claw I took from a mutated wolverine and another from acrylic shifter, comparing them and my soul-bound sword laid out before me. I extend my senses to feel the mana they contain, staring at them in silence. I've been doing this for the last few hours, and I can finally sense the differences, the way the mana changes. I slowly put down the acrylic shifter's claw and pick up a discarded armor plate from Saber, one that had a hole punched through it earlier. Gently, I feel for the mana that imbues it, then I bring the wolverine claw into contact. There. Right there. Just at the edges of my senses, where the two make contact, I can feel the way the claw's mana and the armor's interact, pushing against one another instead of melding. I shove harder, feeling the minute changes until the claw cracks, splintering under the pressure. I grunt, discarding the broken claw and picking up the shifters. Again, I work slowly, adding pressure, but almost immediately I can feel the difference. The acrylic shifter's claw has a significantly denser mana signature, and as I press it into the armor, it punches a hole almost immediately, the denser mana signature pushing against the weaker signature in the armor. At the same time, I feel the electromagnetic force of the armor change. Mana that is absorbed by the claw directly weakens the bonds of the armor, making it easier for the claw to punch through. When I repeat the experiment with my sword, it slides through the armor the easiest, shaving off bits with almost no effort. When I'm finally done, I stand up and stretch out of pure habit. I hate to say it, but Manbun, Aiden, had a point. It's all about perception, and that damn hipster hippie wannabe has a better idea of it than anyone else in the city. Everyone, everything around us is permeated with mana. The higher the level of a creature or thing, the higher the density of mana it carries. We all interact with mana regularly, shaping it to our wills, even when we aren't actively thinking about it. It's why we don't break doorknobs with a touch, why a giant can walk across a wooden bridge that isn't rated for its weight, or why when I run, I can gain the speeds I do without tearing giant divots into the ground. We reshape the mana around us and use it to make the world fit our preconceived notions. The classes and skills we use are just a shortcut that the system offers, a set of buttons for the monkeys to press to make mana work for them. But if you want, if you put the work in, you can directly influence mana itself. That's what most class-enabled, non-affinity mages do, even if they don't realize it. The ones with an elemental affinity manipulate the element itself instead, which is a whole different can of worms. I haven't figured that one out yet properly, though I'm making slow gains. Grinning, I stretch and pull up my notifications, which I've had minimized till now. Skill increase. Mana manipulation level 4. Skill acquired. Mana sense level 1. The ability to sense mana in people and objects is extremely important for mages and mana users. Current range is limited to touch and will expand on training. Quest update. The system. You've taken another step in understanding the secrets of the system by expanding on your ability to sense mana. Reward, plus 500 XP. All right. Enough lounging about staring at my abilities. Even if the Hakarta aren't expecting me to provide anything new anytime soon, I'm going to have to come up with something. I'm not entirely sure humans are being humans and hurting one another is going to cut it. At the very least, I should be out hunting. Not that I'm going to be hunting, at least not today. Jogging over the bridge that connects the suburb of Riverdale to Whitehorse, I glance at the clock in my peripheral vision and put on a little burst of speed. I'm late. Not that I've ever seen them leave on time, but it's still unprofessional. Unsurprisingly, when I get to Main Street, the trucks and cars that make up the caravan to Carcross is still getting itself put together. I'm not the only one who's late. Jason spots me almost immediately, waving me to the front, and I jog over to him, nodding a greeting.
You can relax. They're still in the meeting.
Jason waves toward the Elijah Smith building that the remainder of our local government has moved into. The squat gray building stares onto Main Street itself, opposite the towering monstrosity that makes up the system-designated city center and Roxley's offices.
Morning, Squirt, Ali greets Jason, who snorts.
Morning, jumpsuit,
Jason retorts, then offers me a piece of dried fruit. Taking the fruit, I take a seat next to the teenager. You got kicked out?
Never invited. Jason rolls his eyes. I'm too young to be of use in the negotiations. It's fine for me to fight monsters, train the adults, and walk the walls, but sit in a negotiation about our city? Too young!
Isn't that the way?
I sympathize, glancing back at the building. What were you guys negotiating anyway? I never got the full story.
Huh, Jason says. As I understand it, Whitehorse wants us to stop taking in so many immigrants, particularly their crafters. They've also been pretty unhappy with the loot we're purchasing from their hunters direct, or the goods we're bringing in for resale.
I frown, noting how it's all things that Whitehorse wants.
What do you get for this?
Food? Credits? More security? Jason shrugs.
Whitehorse has an actual working farm, something we don't. We're still importing a bunch of food to keep everyone fed, so getting a surplus would be good. And we wouldn't mind more hunters working the area around Carcross. We've still got to keep half of our hunters on the wall.
I nod slightly, sighing. You guys still intent on sticking it out?
Uh-huh, Jason lowers his voice, murmuring. I don't get how you people live here without a safe zone. At least when I'm home, I know I'm safe. I keep looking over my shoulder for trouble when I'm in Whitehorse.
I chuckle, shaking my head. It's not so bad. The guards are always dispatched to potential spawns before they actually come through, so we just have to worry about the spontaneous evolutions.
Still, gives me the creeps, Jason replies.
Anyway, they've been talking about it for the last few days, but they should have been done already.
I guess there's always something new. Old. Something old in this case.
Elder Andrea Badger replies, stomping forward. The old First Nations lady and titular mayor of Carcross walks up to us, greeting Ali and me with a smile.
Bureaucracy kept us up. However, the forms are all signed now.
Jason shrugs before jumping up and waving to everyone. Once he gets their attention, he points at the cars before clambering into his car without waiting for the others. Behind him, the constable rolls his eyes, calling out orders to get everyone moving. I open the door for the elder before heading to my seat in the front. Time to babysit the children. The trip back is relatively uneventful. More monsters than normal. 6 groups to be exact, but Jason, Mike, and I tear through them like a hot knife through butter. Gadsby still likes getting in close and pounding on them with his truncheon, though he seems to have picked up an upgrade that fires bolts of pure mana into bigger and nastier monsters. Jason keeps things simple, casting bolts of plasma and ice to rip holes into monsters. Myself? I switch tactics, of course. Beam rifle for soft, simple targets, and the sword for harder things. I'm not entirely sure why they even bothered to hire me. The pair of them are more than enough for the monsters we meet, and the additional hunters aren't exactly sitting around doing crossword puzzles. Unfortunately, I'm not seated next to the elder, or else I'd ask her why they bothered. When we roll into the city, I get a quick notification that the quest is completed. Carcross hasn't changed much since I last came here. The improvised wall is now less improvised and an actual constructed wall with watchtowers and automated sensors set up throughout. I know the wall is just the most visible of the town's defenses. Multiple shield defenses are active and ready, protecting against ground and air infiltrations. There are numerous pits and even a few automated gun stands, all waiting to be activated. In fact, I'd say Carcross is better defended than Whitehorse. They certainly have more firepower packed in than we do. Every single-story building in Carcross is system-enabled by now, and the elder waves goodbye to me before heading for the cultural center and headquarters. Gadsby follows her to report in, and Jason gets dragged away by a cute blonde almost immediately, leaving me alone among strangers. Except, the citizens of Carcross aren't exactly strangers, not anymore. A fact that I'm reminded of as I'm dragged into the mess hall for a late lunch. As Ali and I sit around, drinking and eating and chatting with the locals, I wonder if this is Andrea's play, reminding me that the people of Carcross are still here, still around, still friends. I laugh at a joke as I finish off my latest bowl of stew and glance at Ali, then at the time. Well, it's only 3 o'clock, and Jason did say they had a problem with monsters around the city. No reason not to do a little hunting out here. Waving goodbye to the group and declining offers of help, I get Ali to show me the latest known monster groups on the map. Time to go kill something. I'll head back to Whitehorse tomorrow. Life has fallen into a routine since my talk with Lana. I wake up, I meditate,
I train for a few hours, sometimes by myself, sometimes with Mikito or Richard and his pets. Training together, we're slowly breaking down that wall we put up between us. It's not perfect, but it's better than nothing, and holding a grudge over the fact that I nearly killed Minion is just silly. After training, it's always hunting, working to keep the monster population down and gain further experience and credits to fix Saber. Putting the mecha back together, or better than it was, is expensive. Without Saber, I spend a portion of each day just getting to appropriately leveled locations, but at least I'm getting a decent skill in running. I keep going till late at night, or my altered space is filled, whichever comes first. Then, I head into Whitehorse and do a quick dump. If it's still early enough, I'm out again to hunt. Being in Whitehorse, I start seeing the things Lana spoke of, and some that she didn't. The bulletin board of the missing always seems to have just a few new faces as people disappear into the woods, or the corpses of those who don't even bother going that far, leaving their bodies in the shelters for others to dispose of. People who have just given up, who can no longer handle this new world. Then there's the lazy, the incompetent, and the cheats who refuse to help out, living off the largesse of everyone else. I see the occasional fistfights, the shouting matches that Amelia and the other guards have to put a stop to. No surprise there's more than a little resentment over the lack of help. The city council has even gone as far as creating their own court system, overseen by one overworked ex-judge. He does his best to mediate issues among the population. He tackles everything from ownership and living arrangements, custody battles between families, to figuring out foster care situations for those who need it. Once in a while, he even has to deal with real crimes, theft, a few rapes, beatings, the shakedowns that escape the attention of Roxley's guards or are just never brought to their attention. Most of all, worst of all, is the way those with combat classes and everyone else are segregating into the haves and have-nots. The tensions just get worse and worse as the stores that open cater mostly to the combat classers. No big surprise, they're the only ones with any credit. Everyone else is busy saving up to buy their own place to live, to get a little bit more food or other necessities. That doesn't stop people from resenting the combat classers or their fortune. There's nothing I can do about it. Not really. So I just go out and do my thing, fighting and killing and attempting to save enough credits to finally fix up Saber, which means killing this ugly bastard. Mountain Troll, level 52, HP 3580 of 3580. This monster is over 10 feet tall, rocky gray, and covered with warts. An extra long nose and a hunched back, along with a rocky club, complete the ensemble. After hunting them for the last few days, I now know more about troll physiology than I ever want to, including why they're so angry all the time. I'd be angry too if I was lacking in that department. My first shot takes it in the right knee. The second, its left. I keep crouched after crippling the creature, my beam rifle blasting open and searing wounds closed as I get to work killing it. The monster is tough, though. Its resistances to energy significantly reducing the damage I'm dishing out, and its natural regeneration fixes my initial onslaught. As the troll lurches toward me on all fours, it picks up real speed, and I flick the rifle back into my inventory. Hands free, I cast my improved mana dart spell, creating four glowing blue darts that shoot forward as I flick my hand at the creature. I grin wolfishly as the troll staggers, its resistances utterly useless against the mana darts. I summon another four and repeat the process, doing so two more times before I charge to meet it face to face. As we close, I use Blade Strike to catch the monster before he can reach me. Then, I duck beneath the first swing, slicing upward with my sword and shearing through muscle. I spin around as we cross each other's path, laying its back open before the troll can turn. Then, I kick it away from me. Now with enough space, I focus on cleave and swing down with full force, the sword picking up a red and blue glow that sheathes the blade. The cut takes the creature straight on, opening it from shoulder to hip. Before it can recover, I swing again and trigger cleave once more, leaving a giant bloody X on the troll's body. It's not enough to kill it, though, and the troll swings its club, using the momentum from my attack to smash into my leg. Only a last-minute move keeps my knee from shattering, but I end up on the ground, kicking up dirt as I slide a good 10 feet. I bite my lip, a rush of pure adrenaline shooting through my body. God, but I love fighting. When the troll closes in on me and starts its swing down, I call forth my sword and make sure it's right where the troll's arm will be, letting it impale itself on my sword. I leave the blade in its arm, kicking on